Hey y'all, this is Sam, and this is Crimeology. This is episode 140. Before we get started, just a kind of couple of housekeeping things. So first off, Crimeology hit 3 years old. We've been doing this podcast for 3 years. So all of the thanks, all of the appreciation, thank you for letting me and Steven do this little bitty podcast that we never really thought would be anything. Steven and I wanted to do a podcast for years, but we just didn't ever know. We knew that we were not funny enough to like just have a podcast. And so we wanted to do it over a topic. And so Steven and I have a lot of things in common, but just kind of settling on what was one that we really wanted to do. And so we really couldn't figure it out. And then one day I randomly said, well, let's just do a crime podcast. And then we sat down and it was like after years of talking and then just one random day, we decided on a name. We decided when to do it. And then February 1st, we decided to actually make this idea a reality. And so since then we've been doing this. So thank you guys for letting us do this. And thank you guys for listening to it. It's honestly something that we thought would be like, oh, a couple of episodes and like we'll get it out of our system and then we'll move on to like something else. But it's been so fun, and it's also just a great excuse for me and Steven to get together every single week. And so it's been so much fun. So thank you guys for listening and thank you guys for letting us do this. That's been the coolest part. And so that's kind of like following up to the next thing I wanted to talk about was we used to talk about our numbers a lot and we just haven't really, mainly because our numbers have kind of stayed the same for a couple of years now, which is another big thank you to you guys because that means that you guys are still coming back and you still are listening to this, which is crazy to think of in and of itself. We're almost hitting... Before I recorded, I looked at numbers and we almost are at 30,000 plays, which means at some point, you know, somebody's listened to our episode that many times or, you know, not one, you know. And so that's just crazy to think about when it was this podcast that we really just thought it was going to be for our family and friends. And then it turns into this whole big thing. So it's been super cool to just be a part of. But in talking about our numbers, we've noticed that since doing season 5, our numbers have kind of fluctuated a lot and different weeks get more listens than maybe other weeks. So we know that we've probably gotten a lot of new people listening to episodes. So we kind of just wanted to explain ourselves a little bit and just kind of give you a little bit of if you're like, who are these people? So this is season 5. So 3 years, season 5. And each season we try to have a theme or like a topic that we stick to for each season. We do about 30 episodes per season. And so when we got together to talk about season 5, I really was having a hard time finding a topic that I wanted to do. And then Steven came up with the idea to do the top case or like the most well-known case from each state. And so that's kind of the idea that we've got. And so that's kind of what we've decided to run with. And so that's what we'll be doing for season 5 and season 6 to like make up for all of those states. So that's what we've been doing. So since we decided to do that, like I said, we've seen a bunch of new people coming in. And so we just kind of are trying to explain that each episode. So if this is your first time ever listening to this, you have a little bit of an idea of why we're talking about states specifically. And that's why we are doing that. Obviously, this episode, I'm doing it without Steven. So this episode is over North Carolina. So we're not going to do any make fun of Sam and how much or how little she knows about the state. So sorry for everybody if that's your favorite segment. We're not doing that because I'm not going to make myself look stupid on my own podcast by myself. So we're not doing it. But yeah, all of that to say, thank you guys just so much for 3 years. And thank you guys for letting us do this. And thank you guys for listening to it. Because I feel like if it literally was just my mom and my sister and Lorsa, this would be boring. So thank you guys just so much for listening and letting us do this super fun thing. Before we get started, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, share, 5 stars, do all of those things. We've got Instagram and Facebook that are both at Crimology Pod. And so we post source materials on both sites. We post all different kinds of photos and different things. So make sure that you're checking both of those out if you want additional content. And so, yeah, this is episode 140, The Lawson Family Murders. So this week, we're talking about a family that was murdered by the father, Charles Lawson, on Christmas Day in 1929. Now, we know, because we've covered many different cases from this time period, that there's just not a whole lot of information from that time. So there's just not a lot of information about this case that we have to start this off with. Whatever happened to their documentation is just not, the reporting is just not like what it is now. So from this time, we just don't have a lot of information, but specifically, we don't have a lot of information about the Lawson family in general. So we know that Charles came to North Carolina in 1918 when he followed his brothers over there, and we know that he was a tobacco farmer, but that's pretty much all we know about him before the murders. Now, after the murders, we know that people like to make famous murderers. So after this happened, and really just because of the whole mystery behind these murders, we get a little bit more information about Charles. People are doing a little bit more digging into his life. So we get a few more details, but not a whole lot. So we don't know if there was any illnesses there. So we don't know if there was any mental health issues that made him just one day snap, or if there's more background to the family. We just have no idea. Which, like I said, just adds to the mystery of this case from just the lack of information we have. We also do know that in 1911, Charles met his wife, Fanny, and they got married, and together they had 8 children. They had 19-year-old Arthur, 17-year-old Marie, 12-year-old Carrie, 7-year-old Maybelle, 4-year-old James, and 2-year-old Raymond, and then 4-month-old Mary Lou. Their 8th child died from a sickness when they were a child. So in this time, a rural family like this didn't have a lot of money. So this is what was thought of the Lawson family. However, after the murders, a newspaper article came out that called Charles a well-to-do farmer. So now we know that he had enough for the necessities and enough to be comfortable, but not enough to live a life of luxury. And this comes back later, so that's why I'm bringing it up. So a week before the murders, Charles decides to take his family, that he wants to take his family into town, and he wants to get some professional pictures done. So the whole family goes out. They get all new outfits, all new accessories, shoes. They get all new everything for the pictures. They go into town. They get these professional pictures taken. And then this is obviously the last picture that the family will take together. So because we don't have a reason why the murders happened, these pictures are the first suspicious things that officials look at. So like I mentioned, we talked about where the family stood financially. At this time, this was a really weird thing for a rural family to do, to spend all this money on brand new outfits for very expensive pictures. This was just in general a very expensive thing to do, especially for a family this size. So at first, people are looking at this as like, oh, that's like clear evidence that Charles knew he was going to kill his family and he wanted one last picture with everybody. So that's kind of how everybody's looking at this just to begin with. It's like, oh, that's, you know, Charles definitely knew what he was doing and he wanted everyone to have this last picture. However, when the news article that I talked about came out after the murders, this article said that Lawson's family might have more money than we thought. So when that article came out, a lot of those suspicions kind of quieted down, because after you realize they kind of had a little bit more money than they let on, it didn't seem as weird. So let's talk about the actual day of the murders, Christmas Day, 1929.
Carrie and Maybelle were going to walk to their aunt and uncle's house that wasn't very far. So they start their journey while Charles is hidden behind one of the barns. When the girls are close enough, Charles shoots them both with a shotgun. And then, to make sure that they were dead, he bludgeoned them with the butt of the gun. Charles then moves to the house, where Fanny is now on the porch having heard the gunshots. Charles walks up to the house, shoots Fanny, and just right inside the door, Maria sees what happens and she begins to scream. When she yells out, this causes James and Raymond, who are in the house, to go and hide. Charles then goes inside, shoots Marie, and then he ends up finding James and Raymond and shoots them too. He then sees Mary Lou in her crib and beats her to death. Charles then walks to a wooded area near the farm with the shotgun and just leaves the scene. The only survivor of this from this family is the oldest son, Arthur, who Charles sent on an errand before the killing started. Now, this is kind of our first bit of information where a lot of the articles are kind of back and forth about what this errand was or when Arthur was sent off. Some articles say that Arthur was sent off the day before the murders. Some articles say he was sent off hours, maybe even minutes before the murders. That part isn't quite sure. But the fact is that Arthur just wasn't there at the house for the murders. So there's a lot of theories out there that Charles did this on purpose so that Arthur would be able to live and be able to pass on the family name. That's one theory, is that that's why Arthur wasn't specifically there. Some people, you know, because we don't know what that errand was, some people thought that maybe Charles thought it was going to take Arthur not as long as it did, and so he was going to be back, but then Charles couldn't wait for Arthur to get back before he could do this whole thing. Again, it's just one of those things that, because we don't have any information, it's just a big question mark and a big mystery. So that's kind of another mystery in this story. So officials find the body, and when they find the body, their arms are crossed over their chests and there are rocks under their heads like pillows. While officers are at the home with Arthur now, and they're kind of looking at the scene, they then hear another gunshot coming from the woods. When they go to investigate, they find Charles's dead body where he had shot himself in the heart. They notice from the area that Charles was that he had created kind of a little trail in the dirt from pacing around the trees for some time. So all of this happens, but we have no idea why. Some believe, like I said, that Charles sent Arthur away so that he would live through the murders, be able to continue the family name. So again, this means that Charles knew he was going to commit the crimes before he did. So a lot of people who were on the train of, you know, from the pictures that clearly stated that Charles knew he was doing, and then with Arthur being sent away, that's another kind of bullet point that they are saying, listen, that's clear as day that he knew what he was doing. This is one of those things that they're like, yep, that shows that Charles knew what he was doing and knew that he was going to do this. Some family and friends said that Charles had a head injury months before the murders. This is another one of those things that I can't find what happened. So I don't know if he fell from something or, you know, I don't know. There's no idea. I can't find anything of what that head injury is. But these people said that maybe this is why he attacked, because maybe something wasn't right with his head, and maybe this caused him to kind of click, and this kind of caused him to change courses. But an autopsy was done that found no abnormalities. Whoa. Some reports said that Arthur was in town the day before Christmas to buy shotgun shells because the family had a tradition of rabbit hunting on Christmas. So some think that this wasn't something that Charles had pre-planned, which means that maybe something did happen to him, or maybe there were some mental health issues there which caused him to do all of this. Again, those are one of those things that some articles, some reports say that Arthur did go into town for shotgun sales, and that was the errand he was going to run. And so that's one of those, again, just this whole story is just a big question mark, which is why, you know, it's so famous. But this is on people on the complete other side who were like, yeah, no, Charles maybe had something wrong with him. This is kind of one of their bullet points. Now, years later, a book is being written about this story. And so the author of this book is interviewing family members of both Charles and Fanny and the family. And a family member of Fanny's would come forward. And she said over the years, she frequently overheard Fanny and Fanny's mom talk about how Charles had a sexual relationship with Marie and how Fanny knew of this and that it really bugged her that, you know, she didn't obviously like that this was happening and she wished her husband wouldn't do this. But basically, this family member said that this was common knowledge within the family that this was happening. So when this news came out, a friend of Marie's came forward and said that Marie had told her that she was pregnant with Charles's baby at the time of her death, and said that Marie's mom and dad both knew about it. And then when the author asks Fanny's family, they did say that this was knowledge within the friend group that Marie was pregnant with Charles' family. So this is another big question mark. Is this what set Charles off? Did he find out on this specific day, didn't want news to break, so decided that the only way to kind of make that happen was to kill his whole family? It's just question after question after question. So there are a lot of theories about what happened, but we don't know what really happened and why Charles did what he did. After the murders, Charles's brother would end up opening the farm and the house as a tourist attraction. It featured different things like what the family was doing right before they were killed. Like, a big statement of the house was a replica of the cake that Marie had just finished before she was killed. There's stories out there that says that, like, weeks after these murders, his brother opened up the home and there were raisins on this cake. And so they had to change this cake into a replica cake because people would come in and they would steal the raisins off the cake as like a memento of the home. And it just had like laundry hanging up of explaining that like Fanny was in the middle of doing laundry, the boys were in the middle of playing. And so basically set up the house like it was right before the murders. Arthur, the oldest son, would end up moving and living his life, but he would eventually pass in 1945 from a car accident, leaving behind a wife and four kids. So that's episode 140, The Loss and Family Murders. I will say, when Stephen introduced the idea of the states highest crimes, and I started looking at all of the titles that we were going to do, like I mentioned in previous episodes, it was actually a little bit harder than I expected because a lot of the top crimes we have already covered before. So then I'm having to do a little bit more research into the state and figure out kind of what's the second top favorite crime or the most popular crime in that state. And so a lot of times I get cases like this where I've never heard of them and I feel like they're less popular than the internet makes them seem. But this case is a good example of like, it's just, it makes you think and it makes you think about think through all the theories or create your own theories. So these are always ones that I'm always a bummer when I'm not able to get with Steven to be able to record them with him because I like to poke and prod his mind and see what kind of theories he has. So it's a bummer that I'm not with him tonight. But these are ones that I'm like, these are so interesting. And then this is what makes this podcast just even more interesting and, if I can say, fun to do because of cases like this where your mind gets working. in a sick, twisted way of like, who did it? And so this is just kind of one of those another to wrap it up and say thanks for letting me do what I do. And thanks for being crazy enough to listen each week and make me feel like I'm not the only person in the world who also likes looking into these things. So this is episode 140, which is crazy enough to think about. We've done 3 years of Crimology, was also crazy to think of. I was just thinking the other day, we've never talked about kind of what the goals for this podcast were or how long we would do this podcast, but 3 years have flown by, so we'll see how long this continues. But genuinely, thank you for listening. It's super cool to still see numbers, and so this has just been so much fun for me and Steven to be able to do. So, like always, this is Sam, and this is Crimology.